from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, we are actually in Southern California for the annual Friends of FRC dinner. Looking forward to having a great event tonight with about 700 of our supporters, along with Ben Shapiro, who will be joining us. I'll bring you the highlights of that tomorrow. Also, we had a great time with our friends at Calvary Chapel Chino Hills this past Sunday as I spoke for my good friend Pastor Jack Hibbs. I'll bring you those highlights on Friday. But for today, the left is still screaming over President Trump and his administration's announcement last Friday night that they would pursue policies that put the military's mission first, not the left's mission to use the military to advance their deconstruction of human sexuality. Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, joins me in just a moment. And is the midterm going to be a blue landslide carrying Nancy Pelosi to the speaker's chair, as some pundits claim? Chris Wilson with WPA Strategies is here with insight on what conservatives need to do to shore up their support among those conservative voters. Also, the Louisiana State Supreme Court handed the governor of Louisiana a setback in his efforts to force businesses and organizations to surrender their religious beliefs as the price of a government contract. State Representative Rick Edmonds joins me a little later with the details out of Louisiana. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, pastors, coming up May the 23rd through the 25th, we have our Watchmen on the Wall pastors meeting here in Washington, D.C., and we invite you to be a part of that. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, the military certainly had a tough time under the Obama administration, from budget cuts to social policies that undercut recruitment, readiness, and retention. But as promised on the campaign trail, President Trump is ending the politically correct policies that distracted the military from its mission of fighting and winning America's wars. The latest example is the reversal of the Obama-era policy that forced the military to allow and even pay for transgenderism in the military. Now, this is something that was done on the way out the door, so radical that they did it as they were leaving the previous administration. Well, joining me now is Congressman Steve Russell. He is from Oklahoma. He is a member of the House Armed Services Committee and is a retired member of the United States military. Colonel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be back with you.
Well, I'm certain you're probably enjoying some time back in your district as Congress is in recess this week. And so I first want to thank you for taking time to join us. But I know this is an issue that's of importance to you because you have served in Iraq and in battlefields in faraway places, defending the values, defending freedom, and defending what America stands for. And you understand the importance of the policies that surround our military.
Well, I certainly do, and it was interesting in Secretary Mattis's letter to the president, which was based upon a pretty thorough examination of this issue. It wasn't taken lightly. It was an issue that was thrust upon the military, as you correctly laid out at the beginning, by the previous administration. And one of the important things to note in the letter to the president by Secretary Mattis, he just said that the department finds that exempting such persons from well-established mental health, physical health, and sex-based standards, which apply to all service members, could undermine the readiness, disrupt unit cohesion, and impose an unreasonable burden on the military that is not conducive to military effectiveness and lethality. And that is certainly a true statement. Much of, I guess, part of the discussion that we've had in Washington is that they were basing so much of this on a RAND study that was not only incomplete, but glossed over a lot of the data, which Secretary Mattis points out in his letter to the president. And we all were really kind of taken aback. It's like, okay, you're making all of these claims and you're imposing a policy on the way out the door, and yet we've not had any hearings, we've not had any studies, we've not had anything. And I pointed out, Tony, in last year's National Defense Authorization hearings, when we were doing the actual authorization, I just read the U.S. Army's guidance to commanders that was in draft form that was in anticipation if this policy became permanent. and it was coaching commanders on how they should deal with male pregnancies, how they should deal with members of the military with mixed genitalia that would be sharing showers with service members. And it was how to, these are just bizarre things that you would really have to be completely removed from reality to think that that would not have a cohesion and a unit readiness impact. And so I really applaud Secretary Mattis for taking the deliberate route on this issue. And I think the president, in looking at his recommendations, made a wise choice.
And Congressman, it appears, going back to the president's initial kind of announcement via tweet back in August of last year, this is a slight modification of his statement there, in that those who came out under the policy as transgender, they will be able to stay in the military under certain conditions. Number one, that they're stable, that they are not having issues, that they're able to be deployed. So it is what you could say, what some could argue on the left, that it's fair. It treats those who came out under the government saying, okay, you can be transgender now, and if they did that, they will be treated fairly and can stay in the military. However, when it comes to recruiting, it comes to paying for surgeries and so on and so forth, that's not going to happen.
Well, it certainly looks at kind of a body of soldiery that might be caught in some type of a limbo. However, it's pretty specific on the things that would impact readiness, on the things that would impact behavioral health, and these items mentioned earlier. As far as cohesion and other things go, so it does provide some for a change, some pretty clear, specific guidelines. And I think the letter that Secretary Mattis penned to the president provides the clarity that the military needed.
In Congress, I want to go a little bit broader when we talk about the previous policies of the administration, not just the social policies, but, sequestration. You and I talked about that a number of times, that was really hollowing out our military. I know many conservatives did not support, and I wasn't a fan of the omnibus spending bill, but it did increase military.
I didn't vote for it either, which was a tough situation.
It was. For those like yourself and other members of the Freedom Caucus, myself being a supporter of the military, we are seeing our military focus on. However, I don't think it should be a trade-off to fund our military, which is an essential, and increase other domestic spending, which is non-essential. But our military is, under this administration, on a track to regaining its strength and being prepared to fight America's wars if needed.
It certainly is, but we almost have to look at it like an anemic patient who has now gotten a bit of an infusion. That doesn't mean that the patient is as well or to full strength capacity. Although this military funding has been touted as the largest increase, and all of this, the reality is this actual spending is still 20% less than what it was in 2010, and so we have a lot of work to do still, and many struggled with the omnibus because. They realized with North Korea going on and with Syrian operations, being solidified with some unrest in Africa, with the ongoing operations in Afghanistan, with the European Defense Initiative and NATO, with so many things that are on the plate and the reset of the Cold War, thanks to the last administration. Now, here we are with this reality that we were weak. And to Congress's credit, in a bipartisan fashion, on the military pieces, they at least recognized that and came to an agreement. So what sadly we've seen, although we thought with the budget agreement that we did a month ago that we were going to break out of this sequester where it's a dollar-for-dollar trade-off, the reality is, yes, we got our budget guarantee for the military, and then we just larded it up with all of this other stuff in negotiations, which caused even the most ardent defense hawk supporters, such as myself, to have to vote against it just on grounds of good constitutional government.
And I applaud you for that, Stan. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Congressman Steve Russell, my guest. He represents Oklahoma's 5th Congressional District. He's retired from the United States Army. Let me ask you this, going beyond the issue as you talk about having to rebuild. It's going to take time to rebuild our military, and one is material. Obviously, that's a very important aspect of our nation's military. We've got the morale, you know, removing the emphasis off of this social programming that was the only thing that seemed to be of interest to the previous administration.
Right.
But under 8 years, I mean, 8 years is a long time. I mean, when you consider that the average military career, well, I say those that retire 20 years, I mean, that's almost half a career, okay? In that time period, there we saw a lot of good people leave the military, a lot of officers pushed out, just couldn't take the new policies. Do we need to see this administration to rebuild the warrior mentality that is needed in our military? Do we need some of these retired officers to be brought back in?
Well, I think in any time, you know, all we really have, Tony, on that to examine is periods of great national duress where historically we could see that you have seen officers recalled in time of national emergency if it requires the full weight and might of the nation to be mobilized. And I don't think that we would have an exception should we get into something like a ground war in North Korea, which would, you know, not be anybody's desire. But, yeah, you know, there's obviously you would tap back into any experience that you could. But moving forward, I think we're on a right path here to get the military restored. And I hope people continue to support the policies of the president in that regard. He has kept his promise, and I think most Americans want that type of security. You know, we need to do it. And it is, as you had framed up beginning today's show, you know, we certainly have concerns about whether or not the gavel would pass from Republicans to Democrats. Were that to happen, you think you've got problems now? Well, okay. This is the same group of leaders that declared, you know, wars lost and wanted precipitous pullouts that had great cost and blood and treasure later, like we saw in Iraq. And then these are people that, you know, if given leadership post again, would not be the military's friends. So we can't be under any illusions when people somehow feel disgruntled for whatever reason they might have disgruntlement.
Yeah, excellent point, and one that I will talk with Chris Wilson about. And before we're about to run out of time, but to that point, I mean, in a year's time, we've seen ISIS, you know, that was on the ascendancy continually under the Obama administration, basically to be almost wiped out because of the rules of engagement and the military leaders being allowed to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and that clarity has allowed field commanders to go right to it. And knowing they have the backing of the president and of the leaders over them all the way up through the Secretary of Defense has really translated to making good, sound, and moral battlefield decisions that allowed the defeat of enemies.
Congressman Steve Russell, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks, Tony. You bet.
All right. Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, coming up next, are the pundits right? Will there be a Democratic landslide in November carrying Nancy Pelosi into the Speaker's chair? Chris Wilson is here after the break. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins from Washington Watch. You know, in all my years here at the Family Research Council, one of the things that encourages me the most about you, our listeners, is your willingness to help advance the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Your support is enabling FRC to play a major role in the current administration's actions to protect religious freedom, as well as rolling back threats to pastors' free speech rights, just to name a few. But your help is needed for the work ahead as we seek to protect religious freedom in the military and finally defund Planned Parenthood. Please stand with FRC right at this moment. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or make a gift by calling 1-800-225-4008. Again, our number 800-225-4008 or go to TonyPerkins.com. God bless you and may God bless the United States of America.
Hi there. Let's play a word association game. Are you ready? When I say Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? If you're like many Americans, a word like corruption might top the list, but Christian might be the last thing you'd associate with Washington, D.C. Well, the truth is that Christians have voice in our nation's capital. For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been working daily to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. When the Christian worldview is being pushed out of the public, FRC is there to stand firm on a biblical vision for America. Will you stand with us? To learn more about Family Research Council and to find out how you can stand with us in defense of faith, family, and freedom, please visit FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news and ways you can take action. Again, that's FRC.org. Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, the midterm elections are right around the corner. I mean, it seems like it was just yesterday that we elected President Trump into the White House. He had to go through what seemed like forever in that election cycle. But as with all things in Washington, D.C., yet another election season is upon us. And as we continually find out, they're all important. I mean, this is a critical election. I mean, the left is certainly fired up in their, quote unquote, resistance. And whether it be the March for Our Lives from this past weekend or the Women's March the day after President Trump's inauguration, the left's fired up, all right? Well, what does the GOP need to do between now and November to shore up and energize their support among the conservative voters that turned out and helped them in the last election? Joining me now is partner and chief executive officer of WPA Intelligence, Chris Wilson. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, you bet. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Let me just jump right into it, because I know you've been giving some thought to this. You've written about it. What does the GOP need to do between now and the election to shore up their support among those conservative voters that put them in charge last November?
Well, you know, they could start by passing some conservative legislation. I think that's probably number one. It is. I am firmly in the belief that 2018 is going to be a turnout election. And Democrats have more than adequately demonstrated that they are motivated and they're turning out in special elections. And so the left is motivated by the fact that they hate Donald Trump. They hate Republicans. They hate people who think the way that we think. And they believe that the 2016 election was stolen from Hillary Clinton and stolen from Chuck Schumer and stolen from Nancy Pelosi, and they should be in charge. And right now they're motivated. They're motivated in the same way that we were motivated whenever Barack Obama was president. This is what happens whenever a party takes over the White House. The challenge that Republicans have right now is the right is not motivated. They've gotten a few crumbs along the way, tax cuts, child education accounts, and some small reforms here and there. But when it gets down to it, there's nothing there. Obamacare is still intact. There's a budget that was just passed that funds Planned Parenthood, and conservatives, not Republicans in general, but it really runs across the party, do not have the same motivation that they did in 2016. Hillary Clinton is not going to be on the ballot. Barack Obama is not sitting in the White House. And so if Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan want to keep their majorities in the House and Senate, then they have got to take action between now and November and do more for the conservative base that got them elected. Because I got to tell you, if they don't, those conservatives are going to stay home. And it is, I mean, I can tell you from a state-by-state basis, you know, my background and what I do is analytics. And from Texas, where there are a little over 2 million turnout voters, to Nevada, where there's about a couple hundred thousand turnout voters. And what I mean by turnout voters are voters who wouldn't necessarily, Republicans, people who will vote Republican if they turn out, who are not going to vote in the off-year election without some additional level of motivation. And it's a real challenge because it could cost us 40 to 50 seats in the House, and it could keep us from picking up seats in the Senate. I don't think we ultimately lose seats in the Senate, but we are in a situation that right now there are 10 United States Democrat senators up that have to run for re-election in states that Donald Trump won. And each one of those should be a turnout, should be a pickup opportunity for Republicans. But
Let me ask you about that, Chris, because there is, when you go back to the 2016 election, in many ways, the Republican Congress rode the coattails of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the one that really enthused, engaged voters. All right.
That's
now,
right.
I'm going to take a little issue with you here on what's happened. I would agree that Congress has done very little. They have not repealed Obamacare. But when you look at what Trump has done within his ability, I think he's actually delivered on more of his promises. I mean, look, let's start with Neil Gorsuch, a Supreme Court justice, a record number of appellate court judges that he has nominated and have been confirmed. You know, I can go down to a new department within HHS that protects religious freedom and rights of conscience. Mm-hmm. Religious freedom executive order. Would we like to see it statutorily done? Absolutely. Look at moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. First president in a quarter of a century, even though that's been the law. So let me ask you this. So can voters distinguish between the accomplishments of Donald Trump and a Congress that has done less than stellar in the opportunity they've been given?
It's not an easy thing to do, and you and I actually don't disagree on anything you just said. I think the difference is, and where I would come down, is Donald Trump is not going to be on the ballot in 2018. And that's going to be the problem for Republicans, is they have got to motivate voters to turn out and re-elect a Republican House and Republican Senate that right now, in the minds of conservatives, has not delivered on the promises that were made. You're exactly right that Donald Trump has delivered on every single one of those promises that you just put forth. But in some cases, he's actually had to do it over the Republicans in Congress.
Right, right.
In most cases. And I think that's a real challenge for Republican majorities in the House and Senate. And it is, I think, the biggest problem right now, particularly for people who make up our base, is this budget bill that was just signed into law. I mean, the fact that it funds Planned Parenthood is just, it's unconscionable to me that we could have, how many election cycles, Tony, have we run in which you've seen Republicans at all levels running ads about defunding Planned Parenthood? Certainly in the last cycle, after tapes came out of, what they were doing with Planned Parenthood was doing with aborted fetuses, and that we still move forward and fund it at the level we did, and we being Republicans, that makes me angry as somebody who works to reelect Republicans.
Yeah.
So you
well,
put
you
it
know,
for our base.
To put it in context, it was the vice president when he was a member of Congress that passed the first bill out of Congress to defund Planned Parenthood. So, it's been going on for a long time, and I believe you're absolutely right. People should expect more out of this Congress, but my concern is if we lose Congress, or I should say we, if the Republicans lose Congress, I think the president and his agenda is in grave jeopardy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely no question. If Republicans lose Congress, I mean, this is by no means am I suggesting that Republicans should not turn out and punish the House and Senate, because that would be devastating. I mean, what you would look at, just to take the last issue we talked, funding for Planned Parenthood would increase even more. And you can go through issue by issue.
Oh,
I mean, you can without, see millions
Chris,
of illegal
Chris,
sold in a
Chris, citizen. we're up against a break. We'll get you back on more because this is something we're going to talk about a lot in the months ahead. Chris Wilson, always great to have you on the program. All right, folks, don't go away. News from Louisiana next. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. In an exclusive FRC Speaker Series event, Reverend Dean Nelson and Colin Hanna explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, husband, and father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. This is because transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. Yet even the federal government has stated that there is no evidence that gender reassignment surgery has improved health outcomes. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, later we're going to go to the phone lines, and I want to put this out there before we go to our next guest, because I think that last conversation we were having with Chris Wilson, very important. I want to know, if you voted for the first time, so be thinking about this, if you voted for the first time in the last presidential election, first time, whether you just came 18, or I know a number of our listeners said, look, I've really never been engaged before, but I voted because I knew what was at stake. If that's you, I want to know if you will be voting in the midterm election this year. A lot is at stake. We're going to talk more about that, but that's going to be the question, so be prepared. I'm going to open up the phone lines in just a little bit. All right, last week, in a 4-3 decision, Louisiana's state Supreme Court rejected Governor John Bel Edwards' attempt to revive an executive order he signed infringing upon religious liberty rights. A frequent Washington Watch guest and my friend Louisiana Attorney General Jeff Landry had challenged the Democratic governor's executive order that required basically businesses and organizations that contracted with the state to basically jettison their religious beliefs as it came to human sexuality and marriage. A number of legislators signed on to an amicus brief opposing the governor's position, saying that the governor had no right to do this unilaterally. Joining me now is one of those representatives, Louisiana State Representative Rick Edmonds. And I just got word we just lost him. We're going to get him back on here
okay,
in just a moment.
Here I am.
Oh, and here he is. Rick, welcome back.
Hey, Tony, I'm sorry. I'm outside of one of your favorite places. I'm outdoors at the Capitol, stepping out of a session to talk to one of my favorite hosts in America. How about that?
Well, I like the second part, but I thought maybe you're going to stepping out of Cafe Du Monde or someplace like that where they've got beignets and coffee or something.
But, no, it's beautiful. Baton Rouge is awesome.
So what's the weather like there today? I bet it's not any better than what I have here in Southern California today.
No, but it's still pretty nice. Little overcast, but a nice South Louisiana day.
I tell people, if you're going to visit Louisiana, you got to come in the spring or the fall, because this actually is the best time of year in Louisiana. Plus, we're almost into crawfish season, and so it's a great time to be in Louisiana.
And we welcome our guests to come and get some of those good boiled crawfish.
That's right. Success at the Supreme Court level last week. I know you were one of the legislators that opposed the governor and his unilateral move to essentially strip organizations and entities contracting with the government of their religious freedom. Tell our listeners a little bit more about this.
Well, you know, Tony, I think what we see not only in the executive orders, but we also see in the courts, when they don't agree, they step outside of their authority. And that's exactly what the ruling has been, is the limited power of the governor. Actually, what he did is stepped into the legislative lawmaking role and attempted to create another category with as regards to sexual orientation or gender identity. And in doing so, the court at every level has struck that down and has declared it unconstitutional. We're thankful for that, and we believe that is the proper decision.
You know, what's interesting, I mean, elections truly do have consequences, and the parties, there has never been a sharper contrast between the two parties. Now, John Bel Edwards, I actually had him at my church last year for the anniversary of the flood. He's a nice guy. I have no issue with him personally. But the policies that he is pushing, when you compare, let's take Mississippi, Governor Bryant, who I had on my program last week, who passed the Government Non-Discrimination Act over there, doing the exact opposite, saying we're not going to punish someone, denying them services or contracts because they hold to a biblical view of marriage. And here you have the governor of Louisiana saying we are going to punish you. In fact, if you want to work with the government, then you're going to have to drop your religious convictions when it comes to human sexuality and marriage.
Yep, I think you remember back when we passed here in the Marriage Act in the early 2000s, I think 2004, I believe it was, the state identified marriages between a man and a woman by 78%. I mean, there's no question about where Louisianans are. And unfortunately, you're right, elections bear consequences. And when, no matter how nice of a guy a person is, when they don't hold those particular values as true to their hearts, it's not really a conviction. Then as soon as an opportunity arises, it seems that they certainly go the other way.
So do you think this might motivate the legislature? Because I know you're in session just starting, and you've got some other bills that try to extend special rights to people based upon sexual orientation. Do you think those efforts are not going to get off the ground now as the governor's been slapped down by the court?
Well, I'm afraid that a few of them will start in the Senate, and they're going to get out of Senate. Now, what they'll do on the floor over there, I don't know. But I don't think there would be much of an appetite in many of our committees over on the House side to let some of that stuff get out and get onto the floor and get into some extended debate and sharply divide over. Absolutely, the vote would not even be close in the public. You know that. And we've demonstrated that on almost every level. You know, Louisiana is a very conservative state and holds very strong religious and moral values. You know, Tony, not only in northwest Louisiana, where you look at a strong evangelical base, but across the border in south Louisiana, you know, the Catholics hold such a stronghold on and their convictions on pro-life and how we handle family and adoption and whatnot. So, I mean, you put those two factors together, and, I mean, it's pretty red.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. Representative Rick Edmonds, thanks so much for joining us. As always, Rick, great to talk with you. Thanks for taking time to visit with us.
Tony, thank you, and God bless, and I hope you do well as always, and happy Resurrection Sunday.
All right, thank you, Rick. All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to the phone line, so don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side of this message.
Somewhere out there right now, a teacher is using a new technique, not to teach some new math method, but to control the emotions of children in the classroom. Sounds like a conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
It's not. Social-emotional learning, known as SEL, is a new catchphrase that now dominates public education policy. However, hidden behind the SEL claim of building kids' self-confidence is a statist agenda of social engineering that insists on total conformity of thought. It disregards the genuine individuality of students and their family relationships and requires monitoring and tracking of their emotions. Don't miss FRC's new speaker series event featuring Stella Morabito, in which she discusses how SEL is programming our children by enforcing conformity, invading privacy, and undermining the influence of family and faith in a child's life.
Learn more at frc.org/SEL. Again, that's frc.org/SEL.
Most people remember Frederick Douglass as a fiery speaker who denounced slavery and advocated for the civil rights of African Americans and women. What is less known is Douglass's commitment to faith and family. The month of February marked the bicentennial of Frederick Douglass's birth, so it is a fitting time to reflect on the legacy of this great author, scholar, humanitarian, and entrepreneur who served five United States presidents. In an exclusive Family Research Council speaker series event, Reverend Dean Nelson, chairman of the board for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, and Colin Hanna, president of Let Freedom Ring, explore the life of Douglass as a Christian minister, a husband, and a father, and examine how his legacy can be an example for Christian citizenship today. To view this important event, go to frc.org/Douglass. Again, that is frc.org/Douglass.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008, or at TonyPerkins.com.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. All right, here's what we want to do. I want to kind of zero in on something because this is extremely important. A lot of our listeners, not a lot, a number of our listeners, I should say, because we talked to them throughout the course of the last election, said, you know what, I've never voted before. I just haven't been engaged. I just didn't feel like we should. But, you know, after listening to your program and what was happening, you know, I've registered and I voted for the first time. I cannot tell you how many times I heard that. Okay, here's the question. If you voted for the first time in the last presidential election, maybe that's just because for the first time you registered, because you just didn't see the importance of it before, or you just say you turned 18 and you could register for the first time, and so you voted. If that was you, I want to know if you plan on voting in the midterm election. Now, it doesn't matter if I just want to know if you are voting or not. All right, I'm not going to argue with you. I just want to know. I'm interested. Are you, as we were talking about with Chris Wilson, are you disengaged? I'm disappointed in what I've seen from members of Congress, but I know what's at stake. I know that if Nancy Pelosi grabs the gavel, that they're going to move to basically stop the conservative reforms that have been taking place. All right, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation, 866-372-7234. And by the way, the previous guest we had on, Rick Edmonds, state representative in Louisiana, he actually was a retired pastor. I've known him for years, and in fact, when I was in the legislature, went to his church many times, in fact, spoke at his church. And when he retired, he just felt, you know, of course, he'd always been involved, but felt like the Lord led him, and is making a huge impact in Louisiana. And it's just encouraging to see what's taking place as more and more men and women of faith and of conviction are getting involved in the process. And it's critical. And it begins with voting. That's the minimum. And then, you know, it's supporting candidates. Then it's becoming a candidate and actually running for office. I never thought I'd be involved in politics, never wanted to, but I saw the need. Is there not a cause? I think I've read that somewhere before. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Mr. Perkins, thanks for all you do, and you're right on target again that these midterms are going to be crucial. I did take my 20-year-old son to vote the first time at the last general election. He'll be voting again in the midterms with me. So we just need everybody to step up. I mean, we've got so many weak Republicans in there. I mean, you look at what happened with this omnibus bill. I mean, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi not only took the Republicans' lunch, ate it in front of them, and kicked them, you know, I can't say it on the radio, but kicked their ass, and it's going to continue to keep happening because Schumer and Pelosi know that we got a lot of weak Republicans. They got no backbone. They don't stand for anything, and they're weak. And we need to get some strong conservatives in there. You know, I would encourage, you know, your listeners to support the candidates directly. I mean, donors sent $12.6 million to the RNC last month, and we got this omnibus bill passed. You know, I urge him to support the candidates directly. You know, send the money directly to Marsha Blackburn. Send it to the Republican running for Senate in Indiana. Send it to the Republican running for Senate in Ohio against Sherrod Brown. We can win these seats. We've got a lot of red states where there's Democratic senators, but we've got to support the candidates directly. Send your money to the Tea Party or the Freedom Caucus. They're representing the conservatives. The Republican Party doesn't represent the conservatives anymore, and that omnibus bill is going to continue to keep happening until we get some stronger leadership and some stronger people in there. So,
and that's why. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. A couple of things Joe said that I think are very important. One is that I oftentimes you have candidates who are, the party says they can't win, and I'm just saying candidates in general. Usually it's the conservative candidates, the Republicans won't support. Look, support the candidate. If there's a candidate who aligns with you, support them, okay? Especially we're in primary season, okay? You get two bites at the apple in most states, not all states. In most states, you get two bites at the apple, all right? You support the candidate of your choice, and then if it doesn't prevail, then you support the candidate that's most closely aligned with your values. I mean, that's what I did in the last presidential election. I wasn't an early Trump supporter. I was in the presidential. Also in the congressional races, sometimes you got a chance to support somebody who you really line up with. They don't prevail, then, you know, I think it's important that you support candidates who align themselves with conservative leadership. All right, it's critical. And the second thing that Joe brought up was have conversations with your adult children. I mean, those that are voting age, 18 and above, and encourage them to go to the polls and vote, and explain to them, help them understand. Because believe me, they're not getting this. They didn't get it in school, and they're not getting it in college campuses. I mean, look what's coming out of our government schools and on our college campuses. It's everything hostile to what we believe. So take the time to help them understand why this is important and what's at stake if the conservatives lose control of the Congress. And look, I'm giving you the facts out here. I'm not advocating for one particular candidate or party. I'm just telling you the facts of what would happen. But if Nancy Pelosi were to regain control of the Congress, they're going to impeach Donald Trump. Now, I don't think they'll prevail in removing him from office, but they will stop the conservative agenda that's going forward. In fact, what this administration is doing is actually, and I've talked about this a little bit, and I'll talk more about it, is dismantling the left's infrastructure of big government. In, I think it was November of last year, Time magazine on the cover had Donald Trump's face as a wrecking ball. And it said that the Trump administration is dismantling government unlike anything we've seen before. And that is true. They absolutely are. And this is unprecedented. That's why the left is unhinged. It's because it's not like normal where you get, like George W. Bush comes in and Barack Obama just picks up where Bill Clinton left off. Well, you're not going to be able to pick back up because there's been such structural changes. And that's what they're angry about. There's a sense of entitlement among the liberal political class that how dare you touch what we did. This president's stomping on it. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Don in Alabama. Don, welcome to Washington Watch.
How's it going?
How you doing?
Doing good.
What are your plans? You're going to vote in the midterm?
In this election, I vote by absentee ballot because I had a stroke here several years ago, but I've got too much invested in my country not to vote because I am a Naval Reserve veteran. And especially for this particular election, I just have too much not to vote invested in my country.
Mm. Good point. Well, Don, thank you for your service. And you know what? That's a good point for veterans, as we were talking about earlier with Congressman Steve Russell, of how this administration is attempting. It's going to be a long road, but they're attempting to rebuild our nation's military. And for those like myself and Don who have served in our nation's military, I, for one, applaud this president, especially this announcement last Friday of ending the social engineering that was rampant under the Obama administration. All right, let's go to Virginia, where Scott is on the line. Scott, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I have always been a strong conservative and always been and started out really enthused with having Donald Trump being elected, that we might actually get something done, because back in 2010, they said, give us the House, then give us the Senate, now give us the presidency, and we still didn't get Obamacare repealed, Planned Parenthood defunded, the wall funded, you know, which is a relatively new promise, which was Donald Trump's, not necessarily Congress. But I'll tell you, sometimes it seems to me like the GOP does better at limiting the Democrats' damage when they're in the minority, just always opposing everything that the Democrats do. And it's much like what the Democrats are doing now. All they're doing is opposing everything and limiting any ability for the GOP to proceed. And I think the GOP has just been in the minority for so long, basically, that they don't really know how to lead, and they don't have the courage to stand up for conservative values because they're afraid of their jobs. And unfortunately, it appears at this point that the fear of not standing up for conservative values because they might lose their job might be the very reason that they lose their jobs.
Hmm. You know, that is a good point, Scott. Well, first off, Scott, before I let you go, are you planning on voting in the midterm election?
Absolutely. I have never missed since I turned 18, I have never missed a single election. It's my duty as an American.
I agree.
It's just that encouraging other people to get out and vote is harder, because when they say, well, what has the GOP done? I don't, you know. They promised that they're going to do something this time. Well, how do I believe them now?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, all those points are valid, Scott. Absolutely valid. Scott, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. Did you add to what Scott said? I think as an American, we have a right to vote. Right? We have that right. It's guaranteed to us. As Christians, I believe we have the obligation to vote, even if we don't want to. Because so much is at stake in our society through government, and look, I understand that things are not what we had hoped had been accomplished, and I do again agree with Scott when I look at the Republicans don't have the fight, oftentimes the Democrats have. The liberals, they fight for the things that they want. Number one, because I think the vehicle that they use most predominantly to carry their mission, that you know, carry their message and the instrument that they use to accomplish their mission is government. Not so for conservatives. We use the family. We use the church. We don't see the government as the be all and end all. We see it as you know, a necessity for certain things, but it's not something we see as the instrument and tool of change. We want to see men, women, children, we want to see their hearts changed, transform life. Life is the instrument which changes societies. But our interest in government is that it allow us to take that message as parents, to teach it to our children consistently and not have that message counteracted or in some cases completely rebuffed in when our kids enter into a school. And that's what's happening increasingly, where now we've got governments telling parents that they can't even get counseling for their children. If their children are struggling with sexual confusion, government says, no, you can't get them counseling. It's against the law. Or teachers behind the parent's back encouraging gender confusion in our schools, allowing kids to declare whatever sex they are without telling their parents, or giving them sex education, or counseling and referring for abortion, undermining the values and the authority and the rights of parents. And see, this is what's at stake. This is why conservatives care about government, not because we see government as the vehicle for change, but we see government, when in the wrong hands, stifling our ability, stealing our ability, if you will, to teach our children, to influence our neighbors and our community, to live out our faith in such a way that it impacts the world around us. That's why we care about government. And that is what is at stake in this midterm election. Look, we've made tremendous advancements in the year's time. Now, is it everything I wanted to see? Absolutely not. But we have seen more in the last year than I saw in 8 years of George W. Bush, the last Republican president. And I can tell you by seeing how energized and how pumped up the left is, if they regain the levers of government, I mean, they are going to It will actually make Barack Obama's administration, his 8 years, kind of look like a picnic. Folks, there's a lot at stake. And so I would say pray. Pray for our nation. Pray that God would lead our leaders to do the right thing. Pray for them to have courage, moral courage, which I do believe is in short supply. And pray that God would use you. And yes, I do believe he'll answer your prayers. I think that's the purpose of praying. All right, out of time. Sorry we didn't get to the rest of the calls, but I just want people to know how important it is that we be participating in our government. All right, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.